Hi, this is Terry Stewart, CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on one of my favorite shows, the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Little Anthony of Little Anthony Imperials, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Herb Cox of the Cleftones, and you're listening to my good buddy Mike Miller on Harmony Street.
Hi there, I'm Shirley Austin Reeves, the original lead singer of the Shirelles, and you're listening to Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Great. Give me one more.
Nope. Okay. Hello there, I'm Shirley Austin Reeves, the original lead singer of the Shirelles, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. Hi Mike, how you doing, baby? Love you, Mike.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and I'm thrilled to have as my guest a guy who has followed in the footsteps of Alan Freed, Murray the K, Clay Cole, and the late Richard Nader. But he's given us back our R&B and doo-wop in a way that it hasn't been done before. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest, Mr. T.J. Lubinsky. Hi, T.J.
Hey, Mike, it is great to be with you, and thank you for having me here. It's really cool to touch base with my old South Florida roots again.
Yeah, South Florida is a great place, and I'm glad that I'm here now because my daughters in Long Island tell me that they're still shoveling. So, you know.
Well, I'm in Pittsburgh, so yeah, we got a lot of snow around here.
Yeah, I know about that. I had friends that went to the University of Pittsburgh Bradford campus, and some of them, I think, lost toes.
Yeah, it's pretty cold out there. It's cold, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's just go back to the beginning. First of all, when did they start calling you TJ instead of Terry James?
I think it was always TJ. My parents wanted me to be a TJ, but the doctors at Long Branch Hospital wouldn't go up with it. You had to give them some name.
Yeah, they said you got to give them a real name.
So that's kind of what happened. But I really was never called Terry or anything. It was always TJ.
Ah, that's
just
interesting.
Certain people, when it's strange, certain people out of nowhere for unknown reasons will come, like for a week in a row, and they'll say, "Oh, Terry, I need to talk to you about this."
And you go, "Who?"
Yeah.
Well, you know, my name is Mike Miller. That's like Johnny Jones. People say, "What's your real name?" I go to the doctor. I say, "Mike Miller." They say, "Which one?" It's you know, it's like Johnny Jones. But you were born and raised where?
Bradley Beach, New Jersey.
Ah, New Jersey guy. Well, you know, a lot of talented people came out of New Jersey. I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask you very generically. Did you have music growing up in your family, TJ?
Oh, sure, of course. I mean, my grandfather had Savoy Records out of North New Jersey.
Right.
Now, you have to remember, though, I was born in 1972.
Right.
He died in 1974, so I only have one memory of knowing him, and that was really in the hospital.
Ah.
And so that really wasn't a part of my life so much because when he passed, the family and the business all broke up. And so I can't say that was a main influence. It was always in the background.
Well,
from hearing my father, talk about the Jive Bombers or Nappy Brown or
right.
Big Maid Bell or people like that. But I can't say it was my thing. You know, my thing was more hearing the songs on the radio.
Uh-huh.
And when I would hear them on the radio, depending on where I lived, basically most of my life in New Jersey.
Right.
But then from, I'd say, 10 to about 16 or so, I would basically live in South Florida as well.
Right.
But then I'd go back to New Jersey for a couple of years, and I'd live in Florida again for a couple of years, or I'd basically live in Florida when I was going to school, but spend all my summers in New Jersey. So I was really, like a snowbird in a way.
Well, you know, it's really funny because I was a dean in a junior high school in the Bronx for 30 years, and Jimmy Keys lived in my neighborhood, and his sons, Jimmy Jr. and Paul, were my students as a dean, and he was in my office a lot because his kids were not great kids, but he really was offended by the term doo-wop, and he said, "Man, we were singing jazz and R&B. We never sang a note of doo-wop."
I'll tell you, you touched on something very interesting there, because when I did my first kind of doo-wop TV special for a PBS station in Boynton Beach, Florida, called WXEL.
Right.
And at that time, it might have been called WHRS. It might have just become WXEL because I'd been there first as a volunteer, and then I worked there as my job for fundraising.
Right.
I just love this music so much, and I always felt that if we could get live singers in the studio just to sing live, then we would be able to keep the music going. And if I could figure out a way to give people something to thank them for contributing the station with, in that case it was records and CDs back then.
Right.
This is before really DVDs or video. Then as long as we kept doing it, then people would come and support it. That was always my feeling, my passion for it. So the very first night I went to do a show, I called my buddy Frank Iovino.
Of course.
who is instrumental in helping me kind of, get a backing band.
Wow.
And get in contact with artists and performers. And Frank said, well, yeah, I love the idea. You want to do something in the studio? I'm happy to bring my group, the Five Boroughs, over there.
Right.
But he said, it just so happens I've got Rudy West of the Five Keys coming in.
Right.
And I said, well, I got to call Herbie Cox of the Clucktones because they're one of my favorite groups at that time.
Right.
And Herbie said, sure, I'll come in for this thing. And basically, with the Five Boroughs, with two guests. Berman Patterson also had lived in the area.
Right. Well, I'm in Wellington. He lived in Wellington for a long time. So
yeah, so yeah. He came in and joined Herbie, which is a great thing, right?
Right.
And then we had Rudy West. But I remember when we went to pick up Rudy West, in the car. And it's the first time you're going to pick up an artist and you're a little nervous, but you love this guy's music.
I had known
his music from, first time I think I heard Glory of Love was a big one for me with their Aladdin days.
Right.
Then you get into The Verdict, Wisdom of a Fool, which of course, is one of those out of sight records. I always loved Ling Ting Tong,
right.
Marilyn Pierce, of course, but talk about Out of Sight, Out of Mind with Rudy.
Hey, this is Frankie Iovino, formerly of the Bob Knight Four, many years, Just Friends, the Five Disc, and presently with the Five Boroughs here in South Florida on Mike Miller's Harmony Street Show, one of the greatest guys around.
Those songs just really meant a lot to me as a 15-year-old kid. They connected with me in many, many, many ways.
Right.
If you're lucky enough to have someone who loves you, then be glad that you've got someone who loves you. 'Cause lips that were warm can grow cool. Listen to the wisdom of a fool. When you take her poor heart and you do something to it, and you think to yourself, why did I do it? You may find that the world can be cruel. Listen to the wisdom of a fool. Now I had a love just the same as you, and I was a fool not to see. But you still have time to say you love her. In your arms and be glad that she's waiting. You'll be happy, believe me, if you'll only listen to the wisdom of a fool. Only listen to the wisdom.
I do up is my favorite music of all time, and I just love everything about your harmonies and what you do. And he said, hold on, kid. I don't sing doo-wop. I'm no street corner doo-wopper singer. I had a Capitol Orchestra behind me on all of my records. I had a choir of girls, and we had a choir that also included some guys in there. And I had our group, our R&B vocal group, and we put those two things together. We were a pop R&B harmony group. We were no street corners looking for subway kind of group.
Right.
And it really shocked me because it helped explain the difference to me as to really what the pioneers were up to and what the pioneers were doing, but also what the pioneers themselves, who really had a chance to make it big with a label like Capitol,
right,
and all that support around them. And it's true, when you stop and think, I mean, really, think about it, Mike. When you think for a second, out of sight, out of mind, what's one of the first things that comes in your head with that song?
The production of it and the
choir.
Right.
The choir, almost like a Don Cherry feel.
Exactly. Right.
But you forget about that, right? Because we just think, oh, the five keys. So he really was in a totally different class. I guess the Dominoes with the later stuff with Gene Mumford and Stardust.
Right.
Purple. But you really didn't hear that kind of production that much. And so he was in a category within a category within a category. And he just didn't want to be labeled as doo-wop. But then, you know, I remember one time I did had lunch one morning with Richard Nader. He said, let's just have breakfast and talk. Because I really hadn't met Richard. I didn't know Richard. Didn't know his story.
Right.
I didn't know guys like that were doing the Westbury Music Fair. And I was too young to go in and go see those shows. I couldn't drive into the city. We didn't have any of that stuff in New Jersey. In Florida, I was able to do some of it.
Right.
Excuse me. But sure. In New Jersey, I didn't know who any of these folks are.
Wow.
And so when we did the first doo-wop 50 show, Richard Nader called me and said, come on, let's have breakfast. And so I went over and I met him, and a very nice man. He says, do you realize what you've done for this music? Well, look, I'm just trying to keep the songs alive.
Right.
I'm not, I can't call and request to most radio stations at that time,
right,
that were playing oldies at that time. I can't call and request a song from one of my favorite groups. And it frustrated me a lot because I couldn't understand why, hey, come on, just throw on Stranded in the Jungle by the Cadets, or Why Don't You Write Me by the Jacks.
Right.
Or, you know, throw on Hear My Broken Hearted, one of the greatest all-time feel-good songs about a sad situation from the 4Js.
Right.
Or Dupree's, you know, with the Love Eyes and Have You Heard. Why can't you, is it going to kill you to play that in between Baby Love, Stop in the Name of Love, and,
right,
and you know, Sherry, or whatever it was, that the Brown Eyed Girl, or Build Me a Buttercup,
right,
or My Girl. And they just refused. They wouldn't do it. And so the frustration came out of that, making the TV shows, was to say, you know what, if they're not going to do it on the radio, then I'm going to do it on TV.
Right.
And anyway, the short version of the story there is Richard had said, you know, you branded this whole new thing anew, and I don't know if you realize that, but the impact of what this is. And I didn't know what I was into at that time. I didn't recognize what a special moment. I knew I was in something, but I didn't know how big that something was. And he said, so for your next show, I had met him with some ideas of trying to track down a couple of performers that I heard he knew.
Right.
Phil Phillips being one of them.
Right.
A couple other guys like that. And he said, you know, you have to keep going with this doo-wop thing. But you really should put, a couple pop people in there that have some groups behind them as well. And I said, yeah, but what are the hardcore doo-wop bands going to do, you know, when you put the Harptones side by side or the Eldorado side by side,
right,
with someone else, like, let's say, Mel Carter, who I knew I needed to have Mel Carter on a show because it felt the era, it felt right.
Right. Well, you know, you got to go all the way around the horn if you're going to do it and do it right. You know, it's like, you know, one of the things that I've run into is this, and that's having done a radio show for 6 years, but also sung with an awful lot of groups. And it's when you present to the people, if you're a guy that loves the music, you want to give them a little bit of the obscure stuff that is on the flip side, or some of the tunes that weren't you know, in the top five. But then you get caught into, well, I got an audience sitting in front of me. They want to hear the mainstream stuff. And sometimes you scare them with the other stuff. So even though you want to get that other stuff out there, you got to play the mainstream. It's not until the internet that all of a sudden we can play what we want. And, you know, we can throw in tunes that, let's say, by the Jive 5 that isn't even a song that's more obscure than What Time Is It? Some of the stuff that hasn't been heard that much.
I saw Gene a couple nights ago, and I said, man, people keep calling me for that song. I don't even know the name of that song. What is that song? I play it for people, but what is it? You know, because I don't even know. He said, well, you know, give me a little bit of it. I'm not a singer, man. He said, come on, just give me a little bit of it. And so it's like a cadence thing, you know, something like, oh, blah, bop, chick, bop, yeah, blah,
right, right, right.
And he said, oh, yeah, man, that was the cadence song that we did. And it was, you know, United Artists, and then that's what we did for Nickelodeon and blah, blah,
oh,
blah,
yeah,
blah,
they
blah.
Did all the Nickelodeon stuff.
On the Lord of Hero, Nick. On the Lord of Hero, Nick, Nick. On the Ricky Tickle, while living number one Nickelodeon.
Nick, 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 Nick,
Nickelodeon.
Nick, 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 Nick,
Nickelodeon.
Aren't you glad?
You watching? You watching? You watching, Nick?
Aren't you glad?
You watching? You watching? You watching, Nick?
I'm here with my friends, Nickelodeon. The song is Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon,
Bidu 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 bop dee bop Nickelodeon bidu bidu bop dee bop Nickelodeon yeah.
Nickelodeon, your TV network Nickelodeon, the place for kids Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon. Tra-la, tra-la-la-la-la, twilly-twilly-dum, bang-bang, shoo-little-lulu, Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon.
Nick-nick-nick-nick-nick-nick-nick.
Do-wop-shoo-wop,
do-wop-shoo-wop, do-wop-shoo-wop, wow. Do-wop-shoo-wop, 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 wow. Do-wop-shoo-wop, 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 wow.
I do his only website, you know. I do his website for him.
No, I did not know that, but I love him dearly. Great man.
Oh, absolutely. I go back when I had Harmony Street, you know, I had three girls in the group, and that was something a little bit different. And we did. We brought Doo-Wop to the White House. We were the entertainment for Bill and Hillary at the White House Christmas party in 98. Terry Stewart saw us on a Fox feed going in there and invited us to his house in Stanford. So we became friends with Terry at that time. And Harmony Street did everything but have a hit, you know, but we were too late. You know what I mean?
But well, it was but, very you know, different. I guess getting back to the original question, the thing that came out of my conversation with Richard and, you know, the reason I met with him is he wanted to go and do some national touring, official touring around our shows.
Right.
And I was on the fence about it because at that time, you have to remember, there were so many groups that really weren't authentic groups going around. I mean, I saw a group of White Drifters one time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I figured, wait, which one of you is Charlie Thomas? You know,
right.
White guys. In like Pat Boone's shoes, you know, and it was really bad with all those, you know, fake and phony groups going around.
Well,
and it's not that I was worried about Richard, but the way it had to really work was that he would have had to have subcontracted it out to other concert promoters.
Right.
And I was just afraid that, you know, like those guys in Boston would start to use phony Marvelettes and phony coasters. And so we never were able to work together, but the one thing I took out of that conversation, and he really passed it on, is here's what you need to know that you need to think about for what you do in the future. You really need to realize that you've got to broaden that broaden the definition of what you call doula.
Uh-huh.
Don't make it a style. Make it an era and a feeling.
Right.
If it's an era and a feeling, then you've got it all. So you don't have to be so hard on yourself about not including, you know, Lenny Welch singing Since I Fell for You,
right,
and Darling Take Me Back. And it was some great advice. I have to say, Richard Gay, he's a, you know, nice guy. Never had met him before.
Right.
Never knew about what he did. He got very ill shortly after that.
That
meeting.
Is correct, yeah.
But he gave me some great advice, and it just changed my whole world of thinking. Yeah, it is an era. If we look at it as an era, then, you know, we obviously wrote it with the stuff that we love and we certainly want to push in terms of national exposure, making sure people know that. And I found a way to do that was to always put a group on, say, like, you know, Fred Parris and the Satins.
Right.
Next with the Johnny Maestro. But in the middle of those two groups where you had mega hits, mega songs, and songs that really would, for the most part, connect with all the major cities.
Well,
then in the middle, you could throw in an Aquatones or someone who was, you know, regional, less known, but songs that we still love, because when you hear you, you know, it's just, you fall in love with that. So that was the formula. It was the hit, hit, oh, wow, what is this? But it's great. Hit, wow, wow. Hit.
Right.
And that was basically, still is our TV formula.
Well, you know, I think back to Don Kirshner's rock concert, and I say to myself, and, you know, Don lived in the Polo Club. I used to see him at Starbucks all the time, and, you know, it's before he passed away. But they brought you the hits that used to, and the groups that used to see in concert right into your living room and that kind of thing. What you did was you took these people, and how you did it was marvelous, too, because, you know, I know how much research and how much digging and how much background work you had to do in order to put these groups back together, get the original sound, I mean, you know, from the band and cop the feel and give it to the people exactly the way they remember it. Because when people listen to their music...
Only a former school teacher could say cop the feel and be talking about music.
There you go. Well, you know, that's a universal... that's universal.
yeah, well, you know, as small kids now, I don't even want to think about it. But at the time, yeah, absolutely. I was looking for a thrill on Blueberry Hill in the movie theater in the old arm reach.
Yep.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, I remember going to Murray DeKay shows, and you'd see the movie, the show. But I was one of those guys who got in, was the 50th guy online, and sat in the middle. And then we used to hide and move down for the second show until we were sitting in the front row. And what's funny is in those days, everybody smoked. And I said to Anthony one time, I said, how'd you sing with all that smoke? He says, man, I used to put the cigarette out on the heel of my shoe before I went out on stage, and I would blow smoke back at them. So I said, those were the old days. You know, different story.
It's literally, you know, the real live version of Smoke from a Cigarette, I guess, right, Billy and Leach?
Absolutely.
Smoke from your cigarette.
Do, 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 do.
Clouds my eyes, things that you speak of make me realize.
I want to go back and, you know, because what you've done will probably be a book and a movie, let's face it. I want to get back to driving to Pittsburgh from Florida and listening to a tune by the Vogues and having a revelation, you know, going to a new town and not knowing what's in store for you. I want to hear that story from your words.
Well, I'd gone as far as I could go in South Florida, and I was very successful working at this PBS station. And it was a wonderful experience because I got to do all this stuff with all these groups and these songs. But you have to remember, that wasn't my day job. That was like, you know, my main function was to make money for the PBS station. I was in charge of anything to do with on-air fundraising.
Gotcha.
And, you know, you have to understand that a PBS station itself, it's truly, when you hear them say at the beginning, and there's an announcement come on to the viewers like you, it's in a market like Florida where you've got three or four stations and you're just trying to carve out an identity as one of those four stations.
Right.
And you're all competing for all the same programming, and you're trying to carve your way and get your niche and get your message out there and support operations and staff and programming. You have to pay for the programming. PBS isn't like a network. It's like a whole bunch of mom-and-pop record shops in our world.
Gotcha.
And so each one of them is fighting to stay alive. And, you know, I very, very successfully worked at that station where we were, you know, bringing somewhere, I think when I started, in the neighborhood of, say, $300,000 or $400,000 a year in on-air income, not for me, for the
right.
PBS station, for the
right.
station and the operations. And, you know, by the time I had left 5 years later, we were just under $1 million in annual income. And that was just by reaching out to groups, finding targets, finding niches, and then, you know, kind of bringing this idea together. So what I did do up down there,
uh-huh.
first thing I did was put together kind of a task force, a panel of people that could help me get in every area of anyone who really was legitimately connected to it, whether it was DJ like, say, Joe Johnson, who used to be one of my early hosts. And
right.
Then I met Ken Held, and that was a whole different chapter.
Yeah, Kenny's my good friend. You know, we go out all the time to dinner, and Kenny played my stuff for years, but Kenny's a good guy.
Hi, my name is Jimmy Gallagher.
And this is Mike Miller.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing, Jim?
And we're listening to the Ken Held Doo-Wop Show.
In South Florida.
South Florida.
Isn't that right,
Florida.
Kenny?
What are you talking about? All over the world, man.
Simulcast all over the world.
Kenny it would be probably a chapter and a half alone in the book.
Wow.
But, you know, beyond that, you know, getting help from Frank and his band and promoters and other concert producers tying into stuff. I used that same model for other shows that were airing, whether it was a, you know, British comedy sort of club or whether it was a science fiction club. I basically take that same model where I put a group of people together, all find the best interests for the market, and, you know, Florida was always a different market because everyone came from Jersey or New York or Philly.
Right.
And so that was an interesting challenge unto itself, depending on the time of year. But we had grown this thing so big, but I couldn't do anything more than that. And I remember calling a record company at the time and saying, look, I've got what it takes to take this show national because for the last 5 years, you know, we've been offering your product, your CD sets or whatever it was.
Right.
And, you know, there's been 10,000 people in the last 5 years that have, you know, wanted this greatest CD set of doo-wops ever made. I want to make this into a TV show. And unfortunately, the sad part of it is, it's not sad, it's just where I was at the time. The station itself was going through a transition and a management change. I was invited to stay on, which was very nice, and there was a lot of focus change. But essentially, I had gone as high as I could possibly go. You know, I was a big fish at a small station.
Gotcha. Diminishing returns. You know,
and there was nowhere for me to go, and I couldn't take it higher. And that's what I needed to do. I knew in my heart of my hearts, if it could work in this little station in Florida, then my life's work had to be bringing these masses of emotions and connections from the songs to a national market. And so, purely by happenstance, I happened to go to a PBS meeting one time, and I really wasn't looking to move per se, but suddenly I met someone who worked for the PBS station in Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
And they said, look, we need to have someone come up and really run Pledge. We haven't really been doing Pledge on the main channel in a long time. We know your reputation. You know what you've done. How about coming up to Pittsburgh? And so I went up for an interview not knowing anything about the history of Pittsburgh. Nothing at all.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea that there was a connection to music here. I hadn't heard of Porky Chadwick.
And right.
You guys like that.
Well, John Madara.
Yeah. I just, you know, but to me, it was just, I was just going for a job.
I hear you.
To bring my girlfriend up to get married.
Wow.
And, you know, figure out I'm going to be, you know, a guy who's just going to stay working at a PBS station. That was my goal at that time.
Uh-huh.
So driving up, it was a tough situation. I couldn't quite bring my girlfriend up with me yet because we hadn't been married.
Right.
And that was a really tough emotional thing because she for the moment, had to stay behind as I went to try to build this new life.
Wow.
And two things kind of stick out to me. One is that I got a traffic, I went through a red light or something. I didn't stop properly at a red light in a place called Beckley, West Virginia.
Wow.
And so they took you off the road, and you had to go back to the Division of Motor Vehicles.
Oh, man.
Drive in the state again.
It's not like Florida, we have ticket clinic, but go ahead.
Something funny happened, something real funny happened. I was just waiting to get out of the car and to go and figure out whatever fine I had to pay, and it was a really weird traffic place. All of a sudden this song comes on, I Can Dream, Can't I?
Uh-huh.
By the Skyliners.
Wow.
And I said, oh, wow, this is a great song. Where's this been all my life? And I couldn't quite get that out of my head. I Can Dream, Can't I? For a job. So then it's an AM station coming out of who knows where,
right.
Canada or something. And then comes on Don't Let Go by Joe Hamilton.
Uh-huh.
And I said, Don't Let Go. Yeah, that's like what I'm feeling now. I can't let go of all this music stuff, but I got to go and have a job. So basically, to make a long story shorter, about an hour later, I'm heading back to Pittsburgh. A few hours later, with all the snow and the wind, I get in. And as I do drive in the city, there's this big cityscape in Pittsburgh. It's like a tunnel you go through. And when you go through the tunnel, it opens up to this huge vista of the entire city.
Wow.
And so as I'm going through this concrete and clay tunnel and thinking about what life is going to be, and it was a dreary, overcast day, it was raining, it was cold, all of a sudden I'm listening to this guy named Mike Fraser,
uh-huh.
who works on a station called PWS.
Right.
And this song comes on, Magic Town. And I don't know, it just something hit me, and I said, you know, this is something I need to pay attention to. It was very emotional. It was a great song, but it really paralleled where I was going in this world, coming up to this place, which of course was steel and concrete, and you know, places like Westinghouse and Lafts, and you know, all sorts of industrial stuff.
They told me the streets were all paved with gold, But these dirty sidewalks are gray and concrete cold. They said neon lights were a beautiful sight, but how about the one blinking in my room all night? If there's magic in this magic town, where's the good night they said could be found? Where's the magic to make all my big dreams come true? I gotta find it, girl, before I send for you. They said in this town you get rich in no time, but here I am and I'm down to my last dime. I just don't know why I bother to try when no.
Gone by the time I got to Pittsburgh. Cleaned itself up, certainly, in terms of the air in the city, but
right.
Still a lot of holdovers from when Gulf Oil pulled out, and people just weren't, it was tough. It's a tough, hard life. A lot of miners in Pittsburgh,
right.
And they really lived a really tough, hard life.
I know.
And now they're trying to rebuild. And so I came in, and, you know, I got to work at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock that afternoon, and tried to find out more about that radio station, and that's where someone turned me on to Porky Chadwick. And what really happened was, you know, one of my favorite songs of all time had been Would I Love You, the Miracle song, Would I Love You.
If I thought
Right.
And I happened to be just going through the radio dial as I was setting up my office, and I came across a station that was playing Would I Love You. I had never heard this out of Philadelphia before.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've been in Philly and New Jersey a lot, but never heard this. I said, oh, my God, this is, what's going on with music? And the announcer comes on, and he says, yeah, it's on Pittsburgh's whatever, greatest hit CD, blah, 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 you know, big local song for us, one of the most loved songs. This and a song that followed called High on the Hill by Scott English.
Right.
And so you hear all this stuff and you're like, wow, where am I? You know, I mean, this is crazy, but it was good crazy. And from there, I put together another group of people from different record places, record stores, Fred Bond from the Attic Records, who was very critical in hooking me up, and started to rebuild with the same process, but the goal here was for the PBS station. Okay, listen, kid. We hired you to be our pledge producer. So you know, make sure that Yanni has got whatever tea he likes. And uh-huh. John Tesh comes in, make sure John Tesh makes it to the airport on time.
Right.
You know, make sure Ann Murray, when she comes in for a pledge, you know, make sure she's got, peanut butter. So my job really was doing everything that they had to do with the business of running pledge.
Right.
And I said, look, I've got, you know, before I left the station, they gave me the rights to the material that I had produced and recorded, directed. I've got this doo-wop stuff, and I think we really should try it here, because I think if we try it here, you know, just what I'm hearing on the radio, I know there's a community here. I know people used to go to the dance halls. I know there's a lot of great dance places, and I know now there's a big, big history here.
And you didn't call them baby boomers. You just said, we got this group of people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that goes back to always just having adult company in my life. Really, never. Really,
Does Billy from the Vogues know that story about listening to his tune on the driving through the tunnel?
Well, it took a while before I could meet Bill, but yes, he does, and Hugh especially. Those were great guys.
Yeah.
And I met with Don once, and of course Chuck is an institution here. But
right.
That came along later, but you know, hearing that song, it really inspired me to kind of start all over. But I had to really sell it to the station, because they said, "Well, doo-wop, what's that?" And, you know, we're the uh-huh. station, we're opera, we're performances, and we're always, this is not South Florida. We're a top 20 market, and you know, why would we put 3 hours or 4 hours of our airtime into doo-wop?
Uh-huh.
I said, "Listen, trust me, if I'm wrong about this, don't pay me for the last 2 weeks, and I'll go back home.
I'll go back to Florida.
And I was very, very
I'll become one of the five boroughs."
Well, I didn't know what. I thought I'd probably be like a soda jerk for the rest of my life,
gotcha.
You know, which I did very successfully with chocolate egg creams in a place called the Flamingo Diner in Plantation.
Yeah, I know the place. Well, you know, the one thing that I'm getting from all of this is that you're a guy like me. You listen to the signs that the universe gives you, and you take them seriously. I do the same thing. I say, you know, I heard this song for a reason, or I saw that sign for a reason, or I met this person for a reason, and I notice that you have very much that in your life.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that is a good question no one's ever asked before.
Yep.
Everything to me is about gut feeling and intuition and emotion.
I got you.
Not one of these guys, you know, there's a lot of guys that I work with. It's probably why I still don't work within the structure of a station. I work independently on my own.
No, how does it feel? How does it feel? In other words, there's the corporate manual, but how does it feel?
Well, there's vision guys, you know, and there's process people. There's process people and there's vision people.
Gotcha.
And I always was on the argument of, yes, it's great to have process and structure, and you need that to measure and make sure everything's mm-hmm. on track and working. But without the vision, there is no structure, there is no process. And of course, the process and structure was, yes, without the structure and process, you can't have the vision.
Well, I can draw an analogy as far as singing, and that is you could take the five best singers you know and put them in a room, and possibly they don't have a sound because it's just not there. You could take another five guys and put them in, and all of a sudden there's magic, and it works, and it's beautiful, and it's wonderful. It's not always, you know, going strictly by the rules. There's that other element that's there that needs to be there.
Well, and part of it, too, I suppose, is, no usually means when someone says no, it usually means tell me more.
Okay. I gotcha.
And so that's part of it. But getting back to the feeling about it, no, I really live my life by my gut instinct.
And, okay, great.
You know, it's not like I'm hearing voices or anything like that.
No, I hear you.
It's just a feeling that you get that says, here's something you need to go in this direction. You need to go and do what you need to go do now. And you need to follow this. And I think there's a lot of influences that come in along the way. There's too many of them to think it's coincidence. Happenstance maybe, but I would say more synchronicity is probably the right word.
Right.
Being a nice Jewish boy who has a little bit of Methodist in him, but for the most part, it's born and raised Jewish is my religion.
Me too, also. But you know what? In high school, I didn't hang with the Jewish kids. I hung with the Italians because they sang. We were on Relic Records, the best of a cappella. I was like 17 years old. So, and no Jewish kids were doing that.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because, where we come from, we're Reformed, but,
right.
It's one of those things where being Jewish was, okay, a couple times a year, high holy days, you got to go and, do the right thing.
I know.
The rest of the time it was more cultural, though. It wasn't a deep, heavy religious thing. It was more how you acted, how you lived your life.
I agree.
And, knishes and bagels and lox and krepla. That's really what it was. It really was more cultural than anything because you socialized with people, at least around school and in high school, who were sort of in that same situation.
Right.
But at the same time, I did also grow up in a place called Ocean Grove, New Jersey, next to Bradley Beach, New Jersey.
Right.
Ocean Grove was owned by the Camp Meeting Association.
Uh-huh.
And so it was basically an all Methodist town. And my mother's side of the family lived there. And so it was a great learning of, basically all things spiritual. To me, God is God, different paths you go to the same, different terminals, same airport.
Agreed. I agree 100%.
Yeah, so it's, to me, you go to the same source. And so I would just, yes, I was very, with an open intent, not a selfish one. You never go in starting, to say, oh, I need to go and be successful at this. Oh, I need to go and make, money off of this. Oh, I need to go and have something.
If it's not about the money, that's when the money comes. See,
exactly.
If you don't make it about the money, then all of a sudden you're doing the right thing and the money comes anyway.
Exactly.
It's true.
Exactly.
I know.
All that stuff follows if you're on the right path. And, that's not to say, we don't have egos. I've got an ego as big as the universe is. My wife reminds me when I had to take the trash out just before I called,
Well, hey, let me tell you, all of us guys in the genre, and I'm only a small pebble on a big, beautiful beach, but glad to be on that beach. Because I've done my things and I get airplay and I've been in some great groups and whatever, but I'm a small pebble on a wonderful beach. But we all look at you and hold you in reverence because you've done something that so many people have tried to do in the past, and you did it, man. You put it all back together and you presented it to people in a very palatable form. So all they have to do is click on PBS and it's all there. And I applaud you for that.
Well, I
gotta say,
I'll take the compliment. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for that. But I just, to me, it's important to know that, as I was saying before, it's okay to have ego as long as you're not leading with it. If you're following with it,
right.
It's fine. If ego follows you, it's fine. And so that goes back to exactly what it is I'm here to do. And I think what it is, what I know what it is. It's not what I think. It's basically to be a connector through, the music itself. Connects us to our emotions, to our feelings. It heals us when we're feeling bad. It takes us back to good times and good places, or sometimes sad times and sad places. but in a way that we can really reflect. To me, it is complete, total healing.
There are two things that I actually have to say to you. One is, I was on my way to Tennessee to see a guy that I see once in a while as a vocal coach. You know, he's in Nashville. And we're driving, and it's a long, long drive, and I'm listening to you on Sirius, right? And that night, you mentioned Kenny Held, and I actually called him on the phone. I says, hey, you know, TJ's talking about you, Kenny. He says, I hope it was all good. The second thing was, and you're going to laugh when I tell you this, you said, you know what? I'm going to play 45 minutes of Jimmy Gallagher because it's my show and I can do that. So here you go. Here's Jimmy Gallagher. You probably remember the night. And we're driving. I mean, because I'm driving for hours and it's nighttime. And I'm listening to like everything Jimmy Gallagher ever sang. Because he lives down the block from me, of course. And, you know, and we have beers together. But the point is, you know, I had a laugh because you said, it's my show. I'm doing Jimmy Gallagher.
Hi, this is Jimmy Gallagher of The Passions. And you're listening to The Harmony Street Show with Mike Miller.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. You know what? Because at that moment, at that night, that's what we needed to do.
Right. I agree.
Especially if for nothing else than Made for Lovers, because, you know, I mean, that's just a jam.
Right.
And the wonderful Irish voice, the Irish tenor of Jimmy Gallagher. Another guy who helped me very early on with all this.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Well, you know, the Florida crowd.
You have to understand it. It's having the freedom to be able to do these things.
Right.
And also having, you know, the nerve.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
The nerve to say, if it's not going to work another way, you got to let me do my thing the way I feel it, and I got to run with it. And if you're going to get in the process and try to change either who I am, I can't be pure to myself in the intent of the music. Someone else should do that.
No,
and
I
that's
understand.
The key. That's the total key. Absolutely the total key.
One of the other things I want to say to you is one, you know, because my wife and I'm now in Florida. I lost my mother, my brother, and my father. I had Harmony Street. I was a dean in the Bronx in New York. I just, when I lost my entire immediate family in 1 year, in the year 2000, I moved to Florida after coming down back and forth. Frank Iovino said, come on, come be a borough. But I met finally this girl, Paulette, who is the love of my life. If you look on my website, you'll see her. She's beautiful and wonderful. But when I walked into her house, she had a 57 Seaberg jukebox with 200 vinyls in it. And I said, I'm in love. More, even as much as your beauty and your wonderfulness. The funny part about it is I went out with like two Jewish girls in my life. She's Italian. But one of our favorite PBS moments that I got to tell you is turning it on and seeing the Maguire sisters do that medley. Every time I see it, you know, because most of the people on there I've worked on stage with, you know, but seeing the Maguires, we both held hands, my wife and I, and both got chills every time we watched that because it's the Maguire sisters. I mean, what the heck?
Yeah, and that particular, you know, that show came later.
Yep.
You know, we've done a lot of doo-wop things, and I still had plans to do more R&B and doo-wop things.
Right.
But, you see, again, coming at a later point in time, I wasn't stuck on one period of time.
Right.
So, for me, I would come from a place, especially like in New York on CBS FM, where they would have specialty shows. I mean, Don K. Reed, he was the guy who really got me into New York doo-wop, no question.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Mike Miller, my good friend, on the Harmony Street Show. Oh, by the way, this is Don K. Reed. Remember from the doo-wop shop?
Ken Hell took that, refined it, and really taught me more about R&B.
Very cool.
And how it all came. But at that time, Don K. Reed was, you know, a guy I'd listen to in the bathtub every Sunday night before I'd go out dancing. I'd have the radio on and, you know, Come Back My Love, you know, would come on by the Wrens or, you know, Del Cave's Two to Fall in Love or whatever. Don K. Reed really was a main influence. But also Bobby J., who had a similar show where he played a lot of teenager stuff.
The Friday Night Show, right?
And the Hall of Fame show. In his Hall of Fame show, and you know, Bobby was here a couple weeks ago, and I always kid him about it when I see him because you think of Bobby with that great voice and
right.
CBS FM, a great,
right.
you know, unbelievable bearing.
Right.
There's your soul, Bobby J.
Very
You know, you think of him as like, you know, Mr. R&B, Mr. WWRL. That's who you think of him
right.
at first. But when I first heard him on CBS FM, he was playing a Perry Como record called Hot Diggity.
Wow.
So whenever I see him, you know, I say, oh, there you are. I've been waiting to sing Hot Diggity, Dog Diggity, Boom, What You Do to Me. And it was, you know, a great part of history. So Bobby, with his Hall of Fame, Norman Knight also did something similar.
Yeah.
But then I also don't want to forget about the Philadelphia Cats because those guys really taught me so much more later.
You know, Gita. The Gita.
Particularly, you know, Jerry Blavitt, the Gita
yeah.
with the Heater. He gave me, as I was growing up, 15, 16, 17 years old, he connected me to my soul.
This is the Geeter. They call me the big boss of the Big Cat Sauce, and you're on the go with one of the hottest radio shows in town. My man, Mike Miller, with the Harmony Street Sound. This is the man with the plan to make sure that you know everything about the music that's a part of our band.
Whereas guys like High Lit and Harvey Holiday loved them both the same, but in a different way. You know, they were radio guys that really could make you feel like they were with you, and it was very personal all the time.
Well, and we're losing that a little bit. You know, I got a great Don K. Reed story just quickly. Many, many years ago, and Harmony Street opened up for a big, big show. Ronnie Spector was there, who, by the way, lived down the block from me in Danbury, Connecticut for years, but that's another story. But anyway, I looked at Don, and I said to him, is that not Hal Jackson sitting in the second row on the grass? Whatever. And he said, oh, my God. He said, Hal Jackson was my mentor. When I was a young kid, we did a field trip to the studios, and he actually took me aside and spoke to me. And that's what really got me to the point where I wanted to be a disc jockey and I wanted to be on the radio and whatever. So we took a picture, the three of us. And, you know, Hal was old then. I mean, that's got to be like 35 years ago. And I told Don recently that I had that picture, and he said I would love to have it. And I blew it up, put it in a frame, mailed it to him, and he's got it like sitting on his mantle. It's me. You know, don't ask me how I fit into that picture, but Don K. Reed and Hal Jackson. And he really treasures that picture. But that was his mentor, believe it
or
not.
Well, it's interesting. But, it's, you know, it's how all these things kind of feed into each other. And I also have to mention Cousin Brucey. You know, Cousin Brucey people sometimes think, you know, maybe he isn't a hardcore R&B vocal group. But that's not really true about Brucey. He likes anything that has a great beat to it, anything that has a special emotional meaning. And he doesn't get credit for that. But Brucey's one of the most real people I've ever met.
Oh,
yeah. He really loves the music, and he's got his space in the world.
But
also, he's the one who helped me with the pop side of things, right?
Wow.
So that brings us back to the McGuire's. So while listening to Bobby J and Cousin Brucey on CBS FM, all programmed by the great Joe McCoy.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden,
good friend.
You know, all of a sudden you hear one night, sugar in the morning, sugar in the morning, sugar at supper time. I thought, okay, I like this because it's got that sort of lollipop feel from the quartets with the guys and the girls and all that. But then suddenly you hear Sincerely. Now, I was of the camp that there was only one Sincerely, and that was Harvey and the Mungos, you know, Bobby Lester and Mungos.
Yep.
But when I heard it by the McGuire's, I said, you know, this is really nice. I like this. Then you hear the records like Something's Gotta Give.
Right.
And, you know, He, which is just phenomenal by them.
He can turn the tide and calm the angry sea. He alone decides who writes a symphony. He lights every star that makes the darkness bright. He keeps watch all through each long and lonely night. He still finds the time to hear a child's first prayer. Saint or sinner, call and always find him there. Though it makes him sad to see the way we live, he'll always say,
the Roots, you know, it's the Roots, man.
And I called Phyllis up one day, and, and it was totally out of the blue. And I said, "Listen, Miss McGuire, you don't know me, but I'm trying to put together something that salutes all the great '50s pop sound. And I just can't see doing a show like this unless we can get you and your sisters involved. And I know you hadn't been performing in 20 or 25 years, but please just think about this. So, you know, we've done this for this." You know, the roots of R&B, we've done it for vocal groups, but the pop music has such impact in the middle part of the country and in the big cities where a lot of the doo-wops didn't play.
Right.
So we're going to have the Crew Cuts on the show, and they're going to sing Earth Angel, which is a great, nice version. It's not Cleve Duncan.
Right.
You know, but it's a great, pop, nice, clean version, sweet-sounding version of, of course, Earth Angel, and there are other great hits. The Crew Cuts brought us out of Canada. And I really, I can't do this without you, and I can't do this without the Four Lads, and the Aces, and the Coins.
Right.
So many of the other just incredible groups at that time that gave us pop memories. Gogi Grant comes to mind. There's a great memory with on that particular show that you're talking about, because, you know, I'll say this the most easiest way I know how. We had the four lads were on stage when she came in to introduce something, and so Frank Buceri is up there, and, you know, he's doing down, down, down by the riverside.
Right.
All the Istanbul and No, Not Much, all those records, you know, standing on the corner watching all the girls go by.
Right.
Great, great, great records. And Gogi Grant comes in, and from Philadelphia, obviously, and she's a tough lady, right? And just after we finished the recording, Debbie Reynolds doing Tammy for this show.
Right.
And she said, I want to talk to you, Lubinsky.
Ooh.
okay, yeah, sure. How are you? I'm so glad you're here, Gogi. I mean, I'm sorry, you know, we're running late with rehearsals or whatever, but you'll be able. She said, you know, how the blankety blank,
right.
blank, 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 blank do you put these guys on before me? And how come I'm only doing one blankety blank, 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 blank? Song, you know, this is how do you bring me out here for one song and these guys are doing eight songs?
I saw that show.
and I said to her, well, at least you blankety blank 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 here, so just get on stage and do your blankety blank blank thing.
Right.
And with that we kissed each other, and I affectionately call her when I see her, you know, Grandma Blank.
Cool.
So you figure out what the blank is. And then she came on stage and did the Wayward Wind, and you would have thought you were in some, you know, great Western movie.
Oh, yeah.
Know,
I remember the show vividly. As a matter of fact, one of my wife's favorite tunes, and she made me record it too, is Band of Gold, you know.
Don Cherry.
Absolutely.
And what a great sound. To me, I always thought that was an Alan Freed record, a rock and roll sort of record.
Do you know that he was a PGA golfer and an award-winning golfer?
I do,
wow.
Of course, him and his wife are very, very nice to us, and because
wow.
I wanted people to remember him and know who he was. And no one knew Don for singing. He thought when I called him it was for a golf gig.
I got a name for you. You know, I did an interview not long ago with Jimmy Rogers, and most people don't understand that he's still around. You know, they thought he just, you know, that he died, you know, when he had that problem, whatever. And
yeah, tragic story, whatever.
Yeah, but he doesn't, you know, he sings a little bit now and he gets over and whatever. Have you had Jimmy on, or have you done anything with Jimmy?
No, we just never had the right timing, I think,
yeah.
to make it all work out. But, you know,
just
certainly respect his songs.
Right.
When you think of, uh-oh, I'm falling in
yeah.
love again. You know, all those, you know, wonderful records. I mean, you know.
The other name I wanted to throw at you, because she fell off the earth, and she actually lived in one of my father's buildings in the Bronx on 174th Street and Fratelli Avenue. And when Lincoln Chase died, she actually didn't pay her rent for a year, and they carried her, and then we didn't know what happened, and that was Shirley Ellis. I can't find her. I don't know where she is.
Yeah, when you say Lincoln, yeah, I understand. I hope it's not true, but I do understand she has passed.
Oh, see, I didn't know, but you know, I remember
because,
her.
You know, we wanted to.
Wow.
I did a show called 60s Girl Group.
Wow.
Girl Group, 60s Girl Groups recently, and of course, I wanted to bring her on to be interviewed for this.
Wow.
And it was pretty much confirmed that she's on her. But let me just say one thing.
Sure.
The same thing happened with Betty Everett. And this
right.
is an example. This is an example, and it's a very true story. And this is the honest, true story that hasn't really been told before. But I guess enough time has passed where you can kind of, you know about this history. And that is, I was sitting in my home radio studio at the time. I was doing Sirius and a radio station called WJRZ.
Right.
Which is in New Jersey, which I'm actually back on at the station every
right.
Sunday night now. But at the time, I was, this is my original run from 2004 to 2009. I was doing Sirius. I was also doing a short-lived radio show on WXEL in South Florida, the radio station. And so it was a really good time for radio in between, you know, all the TV stuff we had going on. And while this was going on, I was sitting in my studio, and suddenly going to sound strange, but a CD falls off the shelf.
Wow.
I mean, like, literally falls off the shelf onto the floor in front of me. And the shelf had to be, like, a foot away. It was a strange thing.
Right.
I don't know if we had a Pittsburgh earthquake that day or what. I'd never seen anything like that before. Maybe it was just too many CDs, were, you know, piled on top of each other. I don't know. But whatever. It came out, and it landed on the floor. And it was one of these import CDs. It wasn't really labeled. And I was just curious as to what it was. And I popped it in before I was going on the air, and all of a sudden I hear Smile by Betty Everett and Jerry Butler.
Right.
Started crying. You know, because I guess I remember that somewhere as a Charlie Chaplin song, I guess.
Right.
But when I heard Betty sing this and this pain that's in her voice, then, of course, the next track comes on, and it's Let It Be Me.
Oh.
And, of course, you know, we had thought of Betty Everett mainly for the Shoop Shoop song.
Correct.
I always liked her R&B hit, You Know Good. But in this case, Let It Be Me came out, and it was a record I hadn't heard on the radio since Mindy Lang was on 98 Golden.
Right.
That long ago. We're talking a long time ago.
Right.
And so I said, wow. I mean, I'm very emotional at this point, and I don't know why.
Uh-huh.
Hearing this song, and I started crying.
Well,
and I said, I need to find this one. Right.
I understand
I remember,
that.
I remember very vividly saying on the air, I've never done this before, I'll never do this again, but there's something I have to go do right now.
Uh-huh.
So here's a great album, Listen to the Miracles, double-sided hit, greatest hits from the beginning. You listen to this, I have to go do something. And
yeah.
So live on the air, I was playing the Miracle stuff, and it was just like a double-sided LP, I think at that time I was playing vinyl.
Right.
And I looked up something on the internet, everything said Betty was gone.
Hmm.
No longer with us. Absolutely confirmed from every group, every news group, every news article. There was articles about it. I traced her down to everywhere, and it was very clear that she was no longer with us. I called Jerry Butler, and I said, Jerry, I really got to get you with Betty. And he said, I haven't seen her in a long time, and you know, I'm not so sure how well she's doing if she's still with us on this earth. So we just weren't sure, and I tried the people who would have been paying her royalties for CDs, and no one had any records of where she'd been, and somehow I typed in a letter wrong, and it came up as someone who was living in a trailer park outside of Chicago, or maybe it might have been Michigan.
Uh-huh.
And I called the number right then and there. Now, remember, I'm still on the radio doing radio stuff at the same time, and I said, hi, I'm looking for Betty Everett. And she said, this is me. I'm Betty Everett.
Wow.
I said, are you the Betty Everett who sang the song with Jerry Butler? He says, well, what do you know about that?
Huh? Wow.
And I said, well, I know that I love your voice. I'm a guy who's doing a TV show, and I would love to have you reunite with Jerry for a TV special.
Wow.
And she says, yeah, I'll do that. I'll come back and sing with Jerry. Absolutely.
Wow.
And so 3-4 months later, we recorded the show. This was for Doo-Wop 51.
Right.
My second major show.
Right.
And the first night she came out, now she hadn't sang in 40 years. And she had some demons. She had some demons
All right.
that were chasing her.
All right.
And unfortunately, what had happened was she was so nervous the first night we did the show that some of her demons got at her.
All right.
And so she started, I believe she started drinking.
All right.
And we didn't have someone there to help her in her hotel room because there was no reason to.
Right.
Had I known now the pain of what she was going through, we would have had someone right by her side.
Gotcha.
To make sure she was okay through the whole thing, but it didn't work that way.
Wow.
So she came in the first night and she got into dress rehearsal and she was in a tough emotional state.
Hmm.
So much so that we thought that she was going to really, really, really be sick.
Uh-huh.
She turned out getting very sick and having to go to the hospital that night.
Wow.
And she, in fact, almost lost her.
Wow.
Because of, you know, poisoning of whatever was going on in her system.
Gotcha.
And so what happens then? I took someone I knew who was a DJ but also was involved with the clergy, And
right.
I said, can you go be with her in the hotel room?
Uh-huh.
And sit down with her and just be with her. And if she needs anything, just watch her back. If she falls, pick her up.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure she's okay. And let her know that we're here, that we care for her. And this is a great moment. And if she can make it back, great.
I was going to say, but bring a cordless mic with you. She wasn't at that point.
This is about caring for a person, though. More
I got
than
you.
Show at this point.
I got you.
And she came back the next day. It was a dress rehearsal in the afternoon where we recorded, camera recording early. And then she still wasn't quite there. But then that night, she came out. She was in the wings. She's beautiful. She had gorgeous hair, gorgeous outfit. Jerry Butler saw her on the side of the stage.
Right.
And he took her hand. And what you see on TV is exactly that moment. Totally real.
And let her out.
And said, you know, Betty, come on, come sing to me.
Wow.
And he says, come on now, come on, come on now.
Wow.
And he literally brings her out on stage, and they dance to Let It Be Me, and it was beautiful. I mean, if you could see the energy, the spirit, the love, the goosebumps on the back of your neck, it was one of the most unbelievable moments I think I've ever seen or witnessed or experienced. And then, you know, shortly after that, 5 months later, she passed.
Yeah.
And so that's happened so many times.
Oh, I can imagine.
With so many performers, and it happens a lot. And so, you know, depending on who you are, some of my friends kid me and say, oh, yes, here comes, you know, if you get a call from Levinsky, watch out because you're next. But he, you know, when you talk about those ladies and those great kind of pop songs that crossed over, wow, what a special moment with Betty Everett.
The standard stuff.
So that just goes to tell you the power of Phyllis McGuire and all those wonderful groups that were up there with her. And, of course, later, you know, we brought in people like the DeCastro sisters who were, you know, outrageous and all that 50s pop stuff. Very, very, very much still part of the country because for some reason those songs, too, were just as forgotten as the R&B and doo-wop songs. And so that, again, same thing when we did the folk sounds. I really wasn't a folk fan. I didn't live the era. I didn't understand what the music was.
Right.
I knew kind of in the back of my mind, you know, the Weavers would sing "Good Night, Irene," or something like that. But I didn't know what folk and folk rock was. And then one day I'm sitting in my office and going through some CDs. I come across a 50s pop collection, looking for something by the Cordettes, maybe their version of Eddie My Love or something. And I'm going through this, and suddenly what happened? I put the song on by the Brothers Four. I think it was their version of 500 Miles to Go.
Right.
And I thought, oh, wow. I mean, what is this? This is really it. Then you hear Try to Remember and you know, Once There Were Green Fields. And you think, oh, my, what is this?
It was Americana just as well, you know.
It had that same feeling, though, as, to me, In the Still of the Night, or, you know, the same feeling as I Believe by the Earls.
Right.
Different arrangement, different style, but in your heart, it made you feel the same way. And so we did this, you know, first time in probably 40 years on PBS reunion of all the great and a folk and folk rock singers, everybody from Judy Collins to Roger McGuinn, to guys like, beautiful voice guys like Glenn Yarborough.
Right.
And it was wonderful to also do that with that music. And then, you know, we've done the same for Motown. We've done it the same for 70s soul and R&B. And the Ed Sullivan Show is another major, major...
Right, and we've been watching those as well. I wanted to ask you about Margot Sylvia. Did you ever get a chance to record her from the Toon Weavers? I know she passed... we did a version of Come Back to Me with Harmony Street on Collectibles. But Margot was... you know, the voice of the Toon Weavers. I was just wondering if you had a chance to have her on PBS.
It's one of the big regrets I do have. You know, unfortunately, sometimes timing just isn't right. You know, we do these shows roughly every couple years. And, you know, when you go into each show, you could be recording up to 50 to 70 or 80 groups over the course of 2 days.
Right.
And unfortunately, because of the, you know, the economics of having to rent a venue, rent a theater, stage labor that's involved with that, with all the lighting and rigging and set background, and set pieces and set design, you really can't shoot for more than 2 or 3 days without a budget that is just astronomical.
Right.
And so once you reach a certain limit of, say, 60 groups, over 2 or 3 days.
Wow.
You just can't add anymore. There's no more space because what happens is you end up going into a triple or quadruple overtime.
Wow.
And then everything just falls down and there's never going to be another show again.
Yeah.
And so she had called at a time about a year before we were in the middle of doing a doo-wop show. At that time we had just done a couple doo-wop shows.
Wow.
Maybe rock, pop, and doo-wop had just come out.
Right.
And we were just in the middle of all that, and I, you know, she called and she said, "Hey, I want to be with you." And of course,
wow,
I always had reverence from her because everyone from Merry Christmas Baby and
right,
certainly Joe McCoy instilled that in me.
Right.
Mark Sylvia, Happy Birthday Baby, all that stuff. But I think what happened is I just missed her, and then she passed. And that
right,
happened a couple times.
Right.
But then we did have the rest of the group on recently. And they were wonderful, and they were terrific. We miss Margot, but the spirit that she had is certainly still in there with the current girls and guys.
You know, I laugh about something you said before because, believe it or not, I did Speedo's last interview because I talked to him from the nursing home almost every other week. I did Carl Gardner's last interview. I did Clay Cole's last interview, and people have said to me, "Don't interview me.
Yeah.
Let's not talk."
But,
and
you know,
I say that kiddingly.
Of course, you know, it's more about just getting there right in time. To have that moment and to say as much as you can, thank you for all you've given me. Thank you for
absolutely.
Thank you for, how do you say to a guy like Speedo, "My God, you are.
What a man."
My God, you know, the girl I love. You, you don't understand, I would be not with the girl I love for 22 years if it wasn't for that song.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I mean, if you had to select one moment that personified doo-wop, it's Speedo opening up his mouth with those full pearly whites and singing the girl and open and filling up the room with just that word, you know, and that to me is the moment.
The girl I love, she's going away.
baby. I know I'm to blame.
I know I'm to blame.
And this I swear.
And you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
You know.
I know, I'm with you. I mean, that song, although I do, you know, I'm half kidding, but I'm not kidding. My first record by them was, I'm leaving, babe, oh, down the road I go. Down the road from one of those Alan Freed movies, I think.
Baby, move, move, mama.
Well, I'm leaving, baby. I'm going far away. I'm leaving, baby. I'm going away to stay by, baby. Down the road I go. Well, now if you want, you better tell me now. I'm gonna leave. Oh yeah, say to y'all, bye, baby. Down the road I go. I guess I'll always love you. I'll own the stars who will pass. They'll go down, baby. On down the road I go, leaving you, baby. Ain't coming back no more, bye, baby. Down the road I go.
I love you, yes I do. I need you, yes I do. I have to go, I really have to go. I'm going down the road.
Well, down, baby. Oh, down the road I go, leaving you, baby. Ain't coming back no more, bye, baby. Down the road I go.
I wanted to ask you a very important question, and probably you get asked this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Let's talk about when you're doing something of the magnitude that you're doing. Let's talk about the word authenticity. Because, you know, that comes into play as well. Now, you know, you're talking to a guy who sang for a couple of months with Dave Ricks, Salutations. I did. You're talking to a guy who was singing with George Galfo when Phil and he were not talking at one point. And I know, because, you know, Jay Siegel's a good friend of mine, and Randy's a good friend of mine, how important it is to get exactly what was there at the beginning, but also knowing that there are so many particulars involved with all of these groups that are unforeseen. And you, when you're doing this, you need it and want it to be as authentic as possible. So I just wanted to throw that word in there and just get some feedback from you on that word.
Well, I think integrity is the word that comes
okay.
to my end.
Gotcha.
And it's having the integrity to just do the right thing.
Gotcha.
Now, sometimes you can't do exactly what it is that you'd like to do. You try, you try, you try. Of course you try to bring every member of the groups together
right.
in any way possible. Sometimes health doesn't allow that. You
That's
know?
True.
You know, I learned this one time early on with the Platters. We had Herb Reed's group on.
Right.
But then I heard Zola Taylor also had a group.
Right.
And we'd always had Herb on everything we did because Herb, you know, Herb was the Platters.
Of course.
And he had kept that going. And this was after Tony Williams had passed. So
right.
it was really pretty much Herb's show.
Right.
And then we heard Zola Taylor was going out with
right.
this group. And so, sight unseen, I said, sure, Zola Taylor, absolutely.
Right.
Called Herb, let him know that we were going to invite her in just so he didn't feel slighted.
Right.
He was on a cruise ship or something, so he couldn't come in and join us.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened was, you know, Zola came out on stage. She was in a wheelchair.
Wow.
But her health had been, and that's, you know, I mean, look, things happen.
Right.
But her health had deteriorated to such a point that I'm really not sure how much she knew about her circumstance and where we were, what
gotcha.
We were doing.
Gotcha.
And it was just a health thing, you know, it was nothing other than a health thing.
Right.
And so when I saw this, I said to the other group of platters she had with her, you know, let's get all around her in this chair and sing to her
wow.
as you love her, you know, and that's the way to try to maybe do this.
Wow.
Because, you know, the responsibility of putting someone on in 40 million homes, 60 million homes,
right,
is a very, very, very important thing.
Monumental.
And the worst yeah. thing you could do to the legacy and the memory of an artist,
right,
is say, "Oh, isn't that a shame?"
No, I know, I know.
And the camera is not kind to those situations.
Oh, that's
and,
true. I know.
And
it tells the truth.
And so I talked to Zola after the show, and I said, yeah, I want to put this on, but I just want to make sure you're okay with this.
Right.
And she said, you know, please don't show that on TV. It's uh-huh. fine. It's put on a DVD or whatever, but just don't show that on
I guess
TV.
You. Yeah.
And so I didn't. And,
wow.
And so a lot of this has to do with the integrity of what you can and what you can't do. We had the Orioles for my first show.
Right.
Sonny Till's group.
Right.
And the other group of Orioles. And they were both right, by the way. You know, a lot of this comes down to trademark issues. And one had the trademark and was there.
I was helping Bobby with his trademark, and he passed away the following week because Lenny Welch told me to call him, and I was trying to help him, and he passed away right then.
Yeah,
and
Bobby.
Then.
Yeah, Bobby right. was a Bobby was a very dear friend of
right.
my father.
Right.
And,
wow.
And you know, so you know, you had two groups, and you've got to go to the two of them. At that time, remember, there had been no previous show like this.
Right.
On TV, they were on my first show, and you have to say, "Look, man, you were there in 1950, and then these guys were there in 53. You had some hits, and they had some hits.
Right.
But what we need to do to make this work is have you all there, or you know, I guess I'm playing, you know, King Midas,
yeah.
where you got to cut it the whole thing in half and say now no one gets on.
Right.
And that's horrible. What? Of course you want to have the Orioles on in memory of Sonny Till singing. Crying in the chapel. Of course you do.
Right. Well,
but
you know,
if these two guys couldn't get together, then I wasn't going to put on one
I
over the other.
I hear you. You know,
and so that is it's always a challenge. It's always a problem. Thankfully, those two guys put all their groups. I don't want to say guys, groups.
Right.
They all put their issues aside for 1 3-minute thing. They forgot about any problems, any animosities, what was going on live gigs, any of that stuff. And they came together for that song, and it was absolute magic. And so we try that every time. It's not always possible. But you do have to go with what the law says. If someone has a
trademark. Oh, for sure.
If someone has a trademark, and this is different from that whole stuff that John and,
right.
And Mary Wilson were involved with.
Right.
This is a separate thing. And, you know, if you have someone who has the trademark right to use the name.
Right.
And you use someone else's group.
Right.
Who does not have the right to use that name
right.
or a characteristic of that.
Right.
You've just broken the law.
Oh, I know.
And that's the problem. It's
and we can think probably of 10 instances, no names, we don't have to mention names. There are probably 10 instances that I can think of right now where it would be nice to have so-and-so and nice to have so-and-so, but then there's that threshold, you know.
And I'm Switzerland. You know, I don't get involved
right.
in the politics. I'm not here for the politics. I'm
right.
here for, hey, you guys were on the record. You guys have been out on the road doing this for 30 or 40 years. You guys, you know, let's bring all of you together, bring all your talents, and show the world what you can do. And also, by the way, it helps with certain people who maybe hadn't been out there and as polished and as, you know, performing as much.
Right.
To have a little backup. It never hurts to have some backup, too.
Right.
As long as it's all acknowledged up front. This is the original member. This is the original member.
Well,
joining us tonight are these other members and this other
right.
original member coming together. I mean, that was the key. And I'll tell you, I fell into something recently, and I won't get into a specific detail,
right.
but it was the strangest, craziest thing. I went to this whole Facebook thing is very new to me. I don't know.
Right. Well, God bless you for reaching out, because a lot of people don't.
Well, I'm a typewriter guy. You know,
right.
I know the technology and me were like, you know, water and oil. But I said, yeah, I really want to start to engage and meet some of the people who either have seen these shows or been part of the dances or the radio show studios.
Right.
I really want to get out there one-on-one and start to really know my audience now more than ever.
Right.
And in doing that, you come across some places, and there's amazing sites on there. And there was one site for one group which is absolutely, bar none, my personal top five group of all time.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, with this group, there's a situation where very, very similar to what we just talked about.
Right.
You've got a member or two, actually, you know, two in this case, who have a real problem because years ago there was whatever deal that was done, and, you know, they weren't going to be recording and they weren't going to be touring, and they ended up selling their name to someone else, or someone else trademarked the name. And
I'm hip.
Working and using it. And so, you know, you go because you look at this great destination and you say, listen, you're not going to find a fan of your music more than me.
Right.
I'm not here to take sides. I'm not here to choose
right.
one over the other. I'm here to say thank you for your music. And my God, what was it like to record this song? And what did you feel when you were in
right.
this moment, in this
right.
moment of time? And, you know, share with me the emotion that you felt coming out of you, or that you got out of a certain performance. And yeah, there's about five or six groups right now that description fits.
Oh yeah,
and it's sad because it's like they want to make you choose sides. And
I know.
I'm not going to choose sides. I'm there for what, you know, the song was, and the people who also keep it going. And my hope is, my prayer is, they all get together, put all the issues aside, just go out and do it while they all still can.
I have a saying that I used to say. I used to say, shut up and sing. In other words, but Tony Pasa said something very interesting to me, last month. He said to me, you know, I said, Tony, all this stuff between groups and stuff, you know, and it's like, we can name the groups, we don't have to, where they don't talk to each other for 30 years and they won't stand on a stage. He says, but Mike, you got to understand something. Sometimes that stuff that went on was life changing, you know, things done, you know, when we were younger to each other. And it's so life changing that sometimes we can't get past it and can't get over it. I said, but you know what, Tony? It's still, the music is bigger than all of that stuff. The music is bigger. And I said,
well, but you're right. You're very right, Mike, because
you know,
sometimes, there were bad divorces. And that's what I try to explain to people sometimes when they ask questions about specific situations that I really can't, you know, for, if nothing else, for legal reasons, get
right,
involved with.
Right.
But one of the things is, yeah, it was like a bad divorce. And some divorces are amicable, I suppose. I hope I never have to learn about that.
Right.
But some divorces are amicable, and some divorces, that's it. It's over, and people don't talk again.
Right.
No. It's no different in the situation of many of these groups. And I can't tell you how many times we've been so close to putting fractured members of two or three different groups that all used to be part of one or two super groups together. And I mean, I'm talking about, you know, not just R&B 50s or pop acts. I'm talking about all the way through the 60s, the 70s, and even the early 80s with some of the soul and R&B performers we did. And it's always a tough thing. And then after you're in that choice, you've got to make a decision now. It's either one group or the other. And if there's a legal precedent that says you can't use the other group, you know, legally you can't go on the air, and you can't, sometimes depending on the agreements that were done between the groups, you can't even say this was part of this person's history. It's got to all be done in a very specific way, which for us is not so terrible on television. I mean, I don't think it's terrible to have a solo performer and just identify him as that. And if he sang his song, he had a hit on them. People make that connection. That's the good part of TV. But the bad part is there's some reconciliations that just ain't going to happen no matter how hard you try.
Now,
and the bad part is time is not our friend. The more we get closer to that clock, the less and less likely is you'll ever see these guys doing something. And the sad part about that is there's no film, there's no footage, there's no great TV shows or movies that they were part of.
Right.
And if they're not documented the way we're doing this, then they're erased from history, especially because the music is mostly gone from major exposure, which is still over the air.
Once again, shut up and sing. Come on. It's like, you know, it's now, you know, just let's all enjoy the music.
You know, that was what we had Ronnie Spector on. You know, the only thing I didn't talk to her about was her ex.
Right. Leave it alone.
You know, I wasn't going to go there because there's no point. I mean, what was the point in propping up a bad situation for her? You know, reminding her of bad days? No, I mean, absolutely not. It was about her and the moment of being there, and how wonderful it was. She came out, she did all five of her big hits.
Right. Oh, that was a great show.
Including I'm So Young, which you don't get to hear too often by her. And she did a great version of Silhouettes, by the way, from one of her early, you know, pre-Spector recordings. And it was wonderful. It was beautiful. Yeah, why get into the negative? Or just
absolutely. I agree with you 100%. You know, I look at what's happening with radio and I see that it's all going kind of to the internet. You know, the personalities are going. I see that Sirius just dropped some of their personalities for the 50s radio. And I say to myself, I hope we don't lose the personalities. I know that you have people like Cool Bobby B., who gets to play what he wants. You know, Brucey, of course, is going to be down in Boca next week, you know, and people still love him. But I don't want those personalities to go away because that's part of the genre as well, you know?
I do understand it from a radio formatics point of view. And believe it or not, I use a lot of the radio disciplines in television, because there is a very real truth to the fact that, and I think it was either, I'm pretty sure it was Mindy Lang or Joe Johnson, who kind of taught me this at the beginning, because, you know, I used to call them, and I loved them, I loved what they did, I knew they did the music, I knew they had a passion for it, and I would say, come on, play Mickey's Monkey, or Going Through a Go-Go, and this is the Miracles, you know, it's not like they're talking heavy R&B, Who Are You, I'm the Japanese Sandman.
Right.
And she'd say, listen, I love that song. I danced to it. I grew up in Philadelphia. I know how to do the Wagner Walk to Mickey's Monkey. I love it. But we do these radio tests, and we play these songs for people in the room.
Nine
times out of ten, everyone in the room cranks up Tears of the Clown, and no one really responds to Mickey's Monkey. So we got to play to the masses. That's
demographics. Yep,
And of course, my argument coming from a guy who listens to WOGL and of course the Geeter stations, which is different with the Geeter, but CBS FM, the discipline between those two stations was that's fine, but why not mix in something really great between the two big things?
No, I agree with
and
you.
So it's finding someone who really embraces all that. I mean, right now, I have a lot of TV projects going on, and. Eventually, I suppose I'll get involved with doing something on the internet with an interaction of the TV content.
right.
and radio and all this sort of stuff.
Right.
But I do enjoy doing this live show on WJRZ every Sunday night.
Right.
It's a chance to connect with the audience, talk just like we're talking, find out what people are hip to, find out what they like, feel what they're feeling. Not from me to them, more about me sort of trying to be in their shoes, listening to what they're listening to, feeling to what they're feeling.
Right.
And that's something that only radio can do and only radio can give you in such an intimate, personal way. But it's because I'm at a place, you know, which is owned by a company called Greater Media.
Right.
And it's Ocean and Monmouth Counties, a big FM station in New Jersey. But I'm at a place where the programmer and all the management there supports me being me. They don't want me to be like everyone else.
Right, but you've proven that you could carry the load and hit the home run and you know, you boy genius. So it's they need to listen to you when you talk to them. So
maybe not though, because these guys see me more as a radio guy than maybe a TV guy, because I'm not sure they watch all the TV stuff. But the point is, you've got the faith of the management to really invest in personalities and personality
radio.
That doesn't mean the formatics are gone. All that stuff has to be there. But within that, there's lots of room to play and be yourself.
Well,
and so, you know, I mean, I don't know. That's why I still do radio. It's mainly to stay connected to the people. But as when I was on Sirius, when someone came in and said, it was right when they were going through some real financial troubles, they had hired a guy from a big radio chain.
Right.
And he said, okay, here's the deal. I don't want to tune into my 50s channel and hear all this draggy, slow songs that no one's ever heard of that hasn't been tested because none of this doo-wop stuff ever charted.
Uh-huh.
We want you to, you know, basically pick 90 songs. We'll look at those 90 songs, and if we agree, then anytime someone calls in for a request, you have to play off of that list.
Gotcha.
To which I said... and they were very nice. They said, look, we want you to, you know, be a part of this thing, and we want you to do special things for, you know, special events and be around other people's shifts, talking about like a music minute about art, the history of music and stuff. But when you take away the freedom and the ability to connect, then there was no reason for me to be there. I said, well, listen, you need a jukebox at this point. You don't need me. What I do is I connect people. So you should probably go pursue that. And there's no hard feelings. But that's what happened there. They decided to take the list, shrink it down.
Mm.
And I could honestly say I'm not sure why in a subscription service they would do that, other than it was a younger person making a decision. And so anything that was not safe to get someone in trouble, even though the stuff we're talking about was like, you know, In the Still of the Night and Tonight.
The safe stuff, right. The safe stuff, right.
So, you know, it's just, it's their business, it's their place, I'm just a part of it. So I bow out of that one. I said, yeah, well, you know, look, I hope we'll have a relationship in the future. Glad we had this time together. We had 3 or 4 years that we celebrated and got to do this amazing stuff. And I love that so much, playing all these Diablos records that no one other than Ken Held would play. That was wonderful, but now it's time to go on and do something else. So, you know, I don't grudge them for it, but I the one thing that is, you know, in summary, I guess, the one thing that is really sad about just this country in general,
right?
Which is our country, it's my country, it's my
home.
I mean, I'm, you know, a patriot, red, white, and blue, all-American young boy.
Right.
And the one thing that's sad is that we tend to neglect the heritage of anyone who turns over 50.
I agree.
And that's what kills this stuff more than anything. It's like, I'm over 50, can't get sales, can't get advertisers.
Right.
Well, you probably could if you tried and you pushed hard and you stepped outside of the box and you didn't color within the line. You created something that was attractive for the customer, but you see that creates risk. And that's too hard. It's too hard of work for most people.
Well, they're always afraid that people over 50 and the baby boomers, they don't spend money on this. They can't drag any money out of them. But it's amazing to me because I live in Southern Florida, and you know, look at the Polo Club and Woodfield Country Club and St. Andrews and Boca West and whatever. Those people are the people that love their doo-wop. They can't get enough of it. So, you know, it's, and look at Don K. Reed, man. Don said, I would never go on Sirius. I will never do this again. I won't go on the internet. Look at him. He's back on Belmont Radio, and he's back because he just can't live. He can't live without being behind the microphone and at least giving the music to the people. I mean, it's just, you know, it needs to keep happening, TJ.
Well, but the point is, I think what has to happen is, and you've read the articles. I mean, there's proof now to say that, you know, people over 50 have money.
Yeah.
That's why I think the PBS thing clicked for
yeah.
me. The reason it clicked for me is PBS never, ever, ever, ever raised demographics as an issue.
Right.
In any pitch meeting, in any conversation, and, you know, like anything, you're only as good as your last show. And so the one thing that was never discussed in all this was, well, what's the age of the audience? You know, the only question was, are people going to fund our service, not just so we can have this kind of show,
right.
but we, you know, pay for the transmitter being on, pay for everything that happens with the programming, pay for operations at local stations. And that's the way I approach all good business deals. To me, and, you know, I'm a high school dropout. I was what they call, you know, if you were the dean, I was the one who was, you know, in the incorrigible part. Because I just, you know, I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to work in TV. I was 14, 15 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to go, and I knew exactly what I had to do and when I had to do it. And I just didn't have time to stay in that process
uh-huh.
for me. I wouldn't recommend it for my kids or anyone else, but that was the past. I mean, the Miracles are my favorite group of all time. I live for the Miracles. They are everything to me.
Right.
All five of them, you know. And that's, Smokey, of course, is my idol.
Right.
And he's a real genuine person. What you see is what you get. He's a very amazing, incredible guy.
Right.
But also Bobby and Pete. Bobby just passed. Pete Moore, who did all the vocal arrangements, bass guy. And Ronnie White, I never met, but Claudette Robinson certainly is a very, very close friend.
Right.
And, you know, people don't really give her the attention. I mean, if you think of any Miracles record, whatever it is, other than Abraham, Martin, and John, every single song, you know, Bad Girl,
oh.
They Got a Hold on Me, You Can Depend on Me,
yeah.
Got a Job, on and on and on to all those hits that they did.
Right.
Her voice is always the top of the mix.
Right.
Higher than, right there with Smokey's on every single song.
Wow.
But yet, everyone forgets and erases her history.
Wow.
She left the road because she had some miscarriages.
Wow.
She couldn't be on TV anymore. And so for their branding, they took her off the record albums.
Mm.
And nobody realizes that there's five Miracles. But I can
right.
assure you
well,
that,
I mean,
that her voice is there on everything.
But
so that's part of my goal is to give, you know, I always used to think, well, maybe this is about trying to somehow get Smokey back together with them. But
right.
Smokey had already been doing things back together with them. He didn't
yeah.
need me for that because they'd already been doing that on certain special events. What I found out, the ultimate goal was, and it took me a long time, was my role in this was to give the ampersand, you know, the and
gotcha.
The Miracles
gotcha.
Part, you know, the and the Miracles part,
right.
the credit that they needed for not getting credit anymore for what they did for all those songs.
Wow.
So that somehow is the way this stuff works out. You know, you think you're going down one path, but it really, you find out it's really about the rest of the guys in the group who otherwise had even more pain from being erased from history.
Yeah,
and
no.
so that's part of my plight. That's what I'm all about, and that's who I am.
No, that's fabulous. What would you like to say to people who have really embraced what you've done on PBS and have made it part of their lives? Even watching some of those shows 3, 4, 5, and 6 times over and over because they can't get enough of that, the groups that they love. What would you say to those people right now?
Thank you for believing. Thank you for believing. Thank you for allowing me to make the connection with you, for sharing that connection of the music in your life, and thank you for being there to support what it is we're trying to do, because without you, none of this would have happened. And there's still more work to do, but just with your thoughts, but also, you know, your support to the cause, I can't thank you enough. You have made it possible. It's not me who's done all this, oh, preserving these shows, making these shows. I mean, I had the feeling, I had the vision, I love the music, I feel the same way. But without the funding that came from people who watched it and supported it, and then also supported the artists with the DVDs and all that sort of stuff, never could have happened. So my God, thank you for believing and for giving me the chance to carry this forward, because you had the faith to really believe in what the whole vision was about.
Wow. And what's coming up next? What's in the future for TJ and TJ's productions?
Well, we are certainly not done with vocal group harmony songs. Most immediately last night, we just did a show with Chubby Checker. Now, remember, my first show was Doo-Wop 51 with Hank Ballard doing the twist.
Right.
And like anyone else, but I've always admired Chubby Checker because, to me, he was a guy who connected all generations. When he took that twist with his own arrangement and his own version, all those records like Dancing Party and, Turn to the Left, When I Say Right,
right.
Polly Time, all that sort of
right.
stuff. All those, Let's Twist Again, and Twist. What he did to bring generations together, you know, grandparents of grandparents of grandparents with their grandchildren, and have the whole world change. And actually, if you watch the way people dance, he pointed this out last night, when he broke the twist the way it did and it became such a fad, you actually see people dancing much closer together with an up-tempo rhythm that, you know, you only really saw before maybe with a ballad.
Wow.
So what he had done really is, you know, allow us to get closer in love through all these wonderful, dance records that bring us back to great days. So I've always wanted to work with him. You know, I mean, Hucklebuck and all those,
right.
you know, great songs that he had done that were just great party songs that make you feel good. And so this is the first time I had a chance to work with him. It took 18 years, but, you know, picked up the phone and said, you know, we're doing this show. Right now we're not going to have a host. We're just going to let the music play back to back. But, you know, if I were to go for a host on this show, which is all the best 50s and 60s party songs, starting with Bill Haley,
right.
And moving through all the great legends, you know, from Johnny Otis all the way through to a lot of the great 60s groups like Tommy James and the Shondells, and, you know, really covers the best of the 50s rock and 60s and the Pioneers and R&B legends and a little soul and a little Motown. It's all in this show. First time ever kind of party set of party songs for these two great decades.
Wow.
And for having this guy to come out and host it, who I really do believe changed the world by getting everyone together the way they had never gotten together before. Black, white, everything. I mean, sure, Chuck Berry did it with school kids, but this guy did it with grandparents. And,
right.
You know, yeah, and right from the middle of the country, all around the country. So there was only one choice for me. He happened to be on the road coming back from Canada, picked up the phone, called him up. I said, listen, come on, we haven't done this yet. We haven't worked together yet. But I think maybe it's time. What do you think? And he said, if it's dance, I'm there. And he's on. I mean, it was like there was a movie one time about George Clinton showed up at this guy's party.
Right.
You know, because he heard the guy was having a party, and they said George Clinton was going to be there, even though they didn't know George Clinton was going to be there. Same exact thing. Chubby was on the road in Canada, not that far from Pittsburgh. And basically, myself and this guy named Paul Brownstein, who works very closely with me.
Right. And you have a great team, by the way. I just have to add that. You've surrounded yourself by great people, but go ahead.
Well, yeah. And so Paul picks up the phone and says, hey, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm driving. Well, where are you driving? Well, I'm driving, from Canada. I guess we're going to be, somewhere close to Pennsylvania soon. Well, why don't you turn around and come to Pittsburgh? Well, what do you mean come around to Pittsburgh? Well, look, we got a show. You're going to like it. And so the very next day, Chubby is here.
Wow.
After 16 years of trying to get with him on something, he's
wow.
here. And he was incredible. He started with all those impressions with records like The Class, right?
Right.
So he knew the history. He worked with all the artists, but he also knew how to have fun introducing all these archival clips. So that'll be our next thing out of the gate. Lots more with Ed Sullivan. I've got a 50s and just the best of the 50s show coming out. One's rock and roll, one's pop, that's later in the year. And then, of course, the big thing that we're working on, which I've alluded to, but I haven't quite let out of the bag.
Uh-huh.
But I give you a little teaser on it.
All right.
We are doing a massive global effort, and I mean a massive global effort, probably in the next 2 years, where basically we're going to bring doo-wop to the next generation.
Uh-huh.
But in doing so, it's not going to forget about the original generation. And it's going to be something where people from all over the world can get involved in terms of performing and in terms of being part of the process to introduce these songs to current generations and younger generations. But very specifically, it has to be done in its truest form, which is the same choreography, the same dance moves, the same
right.
costuming, the same everything as what would have occurred at the Brooklyn Paramount, let's say, or places like that.
Interestingly, you know, along with that, you know, Paulette and I traveled a lot. We were in Barcelona, so I actually treated the guys from the Velvet Candles, you know, who you know, were together with the Earth Angels at one point. They split. And I treated them all to paella. They weren't doing a show then, but I spoke to Norman Fox, who's told me that he was going to Barcelona. I hooked them up, and when he goes to Barcelona, he's going to do a show with them. So groups that are now emulating the doo-wop and really getting the authentic sound, this is now happening all over the world, as you know, in England, in Barcelona, in Italy. Young guys are just catching the doo-wop sound, and they're embracing it.
And that's part of what needs to be shown.
Yep.
But what I want to do in that process is put guys like that are out there, first of all, discover new talent that hasn't had a forum for this.
Right.
With this music. Not like with what some of the other shows do, you know, with current music.
Right.
I'm not aware of anyone who's done it with our music, with this particular vocal harmony style.
I agree.
And so I want to give them find new singers that could really appreciate this. People with the spirit of like Kid Kyle, who
right.
really loves and respects this stuff.
Right.
And but not, you know, we have to go and find them because they're undiscovered.
Right.
Then find the second layer of groups, which are guys, you know, like the ones just mentioned, Spain and
right.
England and
right.
Ireland and all those places. And love the Earth Angels. They were that's one actually when I was doing the show, the reason I brought them behind Jay and some of the other acts
right.
was actually to test the idea of what is the audience going to react the same way when they sing Teenager in Love
right.
As they would if someone else sang it.
Right.
And the audience did. They went nuts for these
right.
kids doing Teenager in Love. It was amazing.
Right.
So that's kind of what gave me the idea that we really need to do something here. But I want to do it in a way that it brings the original surviving group members in on the process.
Cool.
And that may be not so much like a judging thing, but more a, no, this is how we did a, you know, double time move. This is how we did
right.
a certain kind of arm, you know, an arm gesture that, you know, went with the song. Or this is how the phrasing really goes when you're singing this song. And, you know, also involve other groups that are out there that are doing this as well, because there's a million other groups, you know, that are out there singing.
Right.
And what I call second generation.
Right,
groups.
Exactly.
And involve them in the process, too. So it's a really big, big, big plan. The show is committed to, you know, we're calling it right now, for lack of a better word, you know, doo-wop the next generation.
Right.
Thinking that, you know, the original doo-wop series that I've done, which we've taken about as far as we can take at this point.
Right.
We think of that as the classic doo-wop, right, the classic series. Now it's a reboot of all that. So what I told you here is just a little bit of what the big plan is.
I got you.
But it's so integrated, and it's going to be global, and it's going to be massive, and people are all over going to have a chance to be a part of it. And,
right.
And join in and really showcase their talent.
Hey.
And so that's my next thing, because, you know, if you've done what you've done, and it's given so much joy to everyone at this point, now what we have to do is go out and find the talent and really train them and coach them and teach them to bring that feeling back Well, all the artists are long gone that we can't bring back.
Right, and teach it to the next generations. And, you know, TJ, if I can help you in any way, because I just love to be creative. That's my thing. I don't make a dime doing the radio show, whatever. I'm out singing again a little bit, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, to me, at this stage in my life, it's just about being creative, because if I'm not creative, then I'll shrivel up. you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the worst thing that can happen, right? If you're not engaged and doing anything. Now, I'm with you, Mike, and I'm going to tap into you as we get more into this.
Oh, cool, man. You know,
I do want to thank you very much for this, because this is a wonderful experience and a chance to talk about some things that maybe people aren't always hip to and that I don't get a chance to share on TV, because TV time, you know, it's about the business of keeping the shows on the air for the stations.
I hear
you.
It's been
nice.
TJ, spending time with you has been a thrill for me, and I just so much appreciate you opening up your heart and your mind and giving me some insight into the man, TJ Lubinsky, and because you've done wonderful things and helped so many groups and helped expand the genre, but to give us this insight into how you think, how you got there, what you're doing, what you feel about it, and how you see the future of TJ Lubinsky and expanding the genre, to me, is a wonderful thing. I just really respect you for taking the time out to open up to me.
Well, Mike, I thank you. It's been a thrill for me to be able to talk about so many of these things. You know, all too often you see what happens on television and you say, you know, there's a guy just interrupting a concert because they're asking for money to support the station. But there's so much more beyond that in terms of how we made these shows, how we got the musicians together, what we do in the studio to get the sound of these songs, the instrumentation that we do both before the show, during the live shows, and after the shows to get the sound of the record. And the stories of getting the artists together and the process is a big part of how it all happens, and there's a lot of behind-the-scenes things which I've never had a chance to share, so even getting just a little bit out of that with you tonight and your heart and your spirit and your understanding what it's all about has been a real pleasure. I thank you for that.
I actually sent him a couple of tunes that I've done just, you know, for you to listen to.
I just got it like 5 seconds before you called. I had a chance to just skim through Hashabai again. I thought it was really nice, the arrangement especially. It was a whole different thing, you know.
Yeah, that was me, George Galfo, Joe Neary, and Shelley Brill, you know, when we were singing with his group.
Oh, Shelley Brill.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love Brickyard West.
Yeah.
Shelley's amazing.
Well, that was the four of us.
I say to you with my heart in my hand, hush-a-bye, hush-a-bye again, hush-a-bye again, hush, hush, hush-a-bye again. Say to you, as I did once before, hush-a-bye, hush-a-bye again, hush-a-bye again, hush, hush, hush-a-bye again. You're looking very nice, I hope you're doing well. timing is everything. In life it's often said, I made a big mistake pushing you away. What was in my head? So darling, when you sleep tonight, in your dreamland you'll hear the words hush-a-bye, hush-a-bye again. Hush it by again. Hush, hush, hush it by again. Ooh. 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 Hush, hush, hush it by again.
TJ, thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thanks, bye.
TJ, who called and asked if I would get involved with this, I remember his grandfather, who was in the music industry prior. And then, what better place to do this historical perspective of the music of America than for public television? It's the perfect venue for this.
Doo-wop was not just a guy thing, no, no. The ladies had an equal role singing vocal group harmony.
Thank you for making your pledge. And now, Ronnie Spector takes the My Music stage.
Tell me not to feel the same.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cleveland Stills and the Dubs.
Remember, ask me for the world.
Boom, boom,
boom.
Now we turn our doo-wop spotlight to the Big Apple. Let's go back to the Bronx. The Bronx with the Eternals.
Boom, boom, boom. Where's everybody running? Look at everybody go. The robot, somebody please tell me. What's all the rush?
I'm going to tell you about the blues getting married.
What you say?
About the blues getting married.
The original tokens are here. My fellow Brooklynites, Jay Siegel, Phil Margo, Mitch Margo, Bill Reed, and Jay Traynor. Now, cousin, listen to me carefully. Yeah, Jay is Jay of the original Jay and the Americans. That's Jay Traynor. Here it go.
Come on, everybody. 1961.
Down, 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 down
And now, special guests, Little Anthony and the Imperials.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's do it.
It's just two kinds of people in the world. Why can't we fall in love? Just two kinds of people in the world. They are a boy and girl.
Get ready for another PBS 2-Hour Reunion. Timeless song and sentiment from the dimensions. Back together to take us over the rainbow here on PBS. Ladies and gentlemen, the Dimensions!
Thank you. All right. We thank you so much. We thank my surrogate son, T.J. Lubinsky. I love him dearly. Loved him since he was a child, and so proud of him today. Thank you, PBS. Those of you out there who enjoy the teenagers and enjoy all the music that all the acts have performed for you, give from the bottom of your heart to keep this music alive. T.J. has done more, I think, than anybody in the last 20 years to promulgate this music. As we said, our station, they took it away, but TJ is keeping it alive here on PBS. We've got to support it. You got that? We want to do what we call our money song, our anthem. It is a great American standard, ladies and gentlemen. This song will outlive all of us. We invite you to sing along with us because we know that you know the words. As we thank Herman Santiago. And we thank Frankie Lyman for writing the Teenager's Anthem.
Cousins, Larry Chance and the Earls.
Fell in love.
I got to tell you something, cousins. I'm looking at these guys here, and I'm thinking of Palisades Amusement Park. I got a special PBS reunion now with the members of the original Passions, along with the original lead voice of their record, Jimmy Gallagher. Jimmy. Cousins, he still does. Today he appears with a group named the Brooklyn Bridge. Rock and roll is alive and well.
Street. We couldn't believe our eyes. a big surprise to find we really cared. We looked into each other's heart and found the road was free and clear to Harmony Street. Yes, there were times when we had it all. There were times when we both had our doubts, but through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. We couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's eyes and found the road that led us to Harmony Street. Yes, there were times when we had it all. Times when we both had our doubts, but through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street.
Open up your heart, recall how